Welcome back. Well, the situation at Japan's Fukushima power station is the most serious nuclear incident since Chernobyl. But as we heard today, while Japan's plants have been shut down for 4 days, the fuel rods thereby a little cooler, Chernobyl's explosion occurred while the plant was fully active, spewing 400 times more radiation than the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. A few weeks after the disaster, the then Soviet Union created an exclusion zone around the area. Today, that's grown into one of Europe's largest wildlife reserves. And beginning this year, a small number of visitors are being allowed in, though they have to go with a tour guide and stay within so-called safe areas. Henry Schuckman went on one of these so-called atomic safaris for Outside Magazine with his tour guide, Sergei. I asked him to describe what it was like.
Above all, I'd say it was pretty eerie. When they created this exclusion zone after the accident, in which they expelled everybody who lived there, basically, for an area of about 1,600 square miles, what happened was that when the people left and all the domestic animals also left, as well as all the animal species that live around human beings, like pigeons and rats and house mice and so on, when all of that population of people and animals left, the area was then sort of left vacant for a wild ecosystem, wild fauna, to reestablish. Hundreds of wolves, thousands of deer and elk and wild boar, bison. It sort of reverted to almost sort of medieval natural state.
Give us a sense of what it was like to go into it.
Yeah, well, there's a deserted city. It's called Pripyat. And it was a small city, 50,000 people. But now it is completely overrun by birch trees. The main avenues, the streets, are so thickly forested with birch trees that actually I didn't even realize that there were apartment buildings about 25 yards from me until I had a proper look. You know, and sure enough, these buildings, these old concrete Soviet-style apartment blocks, you know, all their terraces have got birch trees growing in them. The balconies have birch trees growing in them. Some of them are crumbling. Trees aren't very good for buildings when they're growing on them. And even where nature is so abundant, you know, because all the farmland has become forest, basically, you'd sort of think it might be beautiful and wonderful and whatever, but it's creepy. It's something very eerie about it. It's a sort of poisoned Eden.
Well, tell us about the poison part. You remind us of the cleanup effort. The most contaminated villages bulldozed and buried. Trees were planted to sort of bind the radioactivity into the soil. But still, how much radioactivity is there?
It's very hard to be sure. There's some parts that have been very thoroughly cleaned up. In fact, the Soviets, you know, this happened during just towards the end of Soviet times. And they drafted in 650,000 people for this cleanup operation. The result is that, yes, there's large parts of the zone, the exclusion zone, where you can fairly safely walk around and be driven around. But it's very unpredictable. I mean, for example, in a deserted fairground in this abandoned city, our guide, you know, I was about to step in a certain direction. He said, stop, stop. You see that moss down there? There was a patch of moss maybe 6 feet across or something. He said, don't walk on that. It's highly radioactive. I mean, you know, it was really very unpredictable. It varies from, you know, yard to yard. And that's actually the way that radioactivity travels. You know, you can clean up a whole area. But if any of the dust has been picked up by evaporation and become cloud, and then wherever the rain falls is going to be radioactive. That's why, for example, Wales, there are parts of Wales today where farmers still can't sell their sheep because the meat is slightly radioactive from Chernobyl.
Well, but what is it doing to the animals who are still there and the birds? Professors from the University of South Carolina and the University of Paris did a study. They found significantly fewer insects, mammals, and birds, and many of the animals with deformities, birds, with 5% smaller brains and other kinds of deformities. Now, you say the place is teeming with wildlife. How is the radioactivity affecting them?
There has been quite a bit of research now showing that even though they seem to be thriving, there's genetic damage happening. And as you say, there's a lot of mutation. There are swallows where the population is 20% albino, which is, you know, shouldn't be happening at all. There's albinism and there's asymmetry of feathers, and there are all kinds of genetic change also to trees and even to large mammals. So the thing is really that it appears to be a thriving wildlife refuge, but there are all kinds of problems in the genetic stability.
And what about the people? Farmers who quietly move back onto their farms after all and just, you know, tolerated by the government?
If anything, that was the most extraordinary thing, is that there are a few hundred peasant farmers, as you say, who have returned to their farms. And in fact, some of them did fairly soon after they were evicted back in 1986 and have been living there for, whatever, nearly 25 years. Apparently, on the whole, with no adverse health. The cancer rate among that population is very slightly higher than in the rest of Ukraine, but it's such a small population that it's not really significant. They feel that they're living in a very healthy place. There actually is, in fact, some research that does suggest that a small increase in the radioactive dose that a person is receiving daily, because we all are receiving radioactivity daily, but a small increase in that up to a certain level is actually good for health, some research seems to show. And these people, they're eating food out of the soil, they're grown out of the soil there, they're drinking the water, they're entirely sort of immersed in that contaminated landscape, and they don't seem to be suffering terribly, not like the families and descendants of the people who worked in the cleanup operation. You know, 2.7 million people in the Ukraine and Belarus and Russia have suffered terribly from the Chernobyl disaster.
Well, but the point is, there does seem to be this terrible disconnect. I mean, there were 5,000 children who we know have developed thyroid cancer because of living near the site again when this happened. And here you have these people resettling in the area. What do experts say about them? And is there the speculation that maybe 20 years down the road something will happen?
You know, the truth is, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, how a specific person will be affected by radiation. Yes, I mean, there are certain thresholds, you know, above which they can say basically all humans are going to suffer. But, you know, what constitutes a dangerous dose below that, I think it's very hard for people to say, actually. The scientists that I spoke to, you know, could only really pinpoint extremes.
Did you see deformities in animals?
No, I didn't. No. The trees, I did see birch trees looking that didn't have a trunk, you know, which was kind of creepy. And there's a general sense that, I don't know if I've conveyed this enough, that there's a real, it's eerie there. It isn't eerie in the way that, you know, an ancient forest is perhaps eerie. It's something slightly different. You feel that, yes, it's very, very beautiful and silent, but it feels slightly creepy. You know that there's something wrong. It's hard to put a finger on, but I couldn't help feeling it all the time I was there.
That's Henry Shookman, who traveled through Chernobyl's radioactive exclusion site to report on the people and wildlife he found there for Outside Magazine. We'll link you to his article. Henry, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
And, of course, we'll continue to follow the nuclear power crisis in Japan tomorrow. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.